There are a million ways to make money in the food service industry. You just have to find one. On the Titans of Food Service podcast, I interview real life movers and shakers in the food game who cut through all the noise to get to the top. My name is Nick Portillo, and welcome to the Titans of Food Service podcast. Let's jump right into it. Hello to my fellow food service community from my sunny, well, actually not so sunny, Orange County, California studio. Nick Portillo here, and this is the Titans of Food Service. In today's episode, I'm joined by Paul Fournier. He is the president at Tactic Wear Resources, and this is actually his second time coming on. He was on my sixth ever episode, so excited to have him back. Reason I brought him back is he is one of the most highly sought after food service consultants in our industry. I wanted to talk to him about everything that's happened within the broker world, the changes that have happened recently with consolidation of two large brokers, kind of the fallout, and really specifically how manufacturers can maximize their broker relationships as the manufacturers start to settle in, hire the new brokers. What's the best way to work with them, manage them, and ultimately have a great relationship together? So we kind of dive deep into that today. It's a great listen. Welcome back. Thanks for listening. Let's go ahead and welcome Paul. Hey, Paul, how are you?
Good. Thanks for having me, Nick.
Yeah, you know, this is our second go around. And, you know, I always appreciate your insights. So appreciate you taking time to be on with me.
Oh, absolutely.
So I'd like to start off with the Fiery Five food service questions. These are kind of five easy icebreaker questions. Are you ready?
Absolutely. Let's do it.
If you could have dinner with any one person, either historical or alive, who would it be and why?
Oh, probably Benjamin Franklin. He was an innovator. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. He's a great guy. Yeah. What a mind. You know, some people go through life and they really do a wonderful job and they communicate well. He was one of those people.
Yeah, that's for sure. For sure. Great choice. If someone had one night in Kansas City, where must they eat?
Boy, that's a good question. You know, we're noted for barbecue in Kansas City. So probably okay. Jack Stack Barbecue. Jack Stack Barbecue.
Okay.
They represent all the best parts of barbecue, a little bit of everything.
All right. If you could have one type of cuisine for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Probably Italian.
It's
nemesis. Absolutely.
Yeah. Are there any foods or dishes you've wanted to try but haven't yet tried?
You know, I've become partial to some of the African cultural foods. I think they're pretty diverse and really interesting meals. So I had the opportunity to dine at an Ethiopian restaurant, and it was delicious, just wonderful. So, you know, we all have different tastes, and it's nice to, you know, have the opportunity to get to try some of those.
Do you have a favorite food-related memory from traveling?
Well, I travel extensively all over the globe, it seems, but probably Scotland had some great, great cuisine. And really down to home. The only thing I couldn't handle was the haggis, or I probably don't pronounce that right, but a little strong. But, you know, there's a lot of great people over the world. They all have certain things that they do like, things they don't like. And I try to blend into the culture wherever I go.
You know, I've been to Scotland one time back in 2019, and that's actually where I proposed to my wife. We were like, let's go to Scotland and try it out. And it was a beautiful place. I mean, the people are so nice. I actually did an ancestry.com thing. And I always knew that I have Scottish in me, but I have a lot of Scottish, a higher percentage than I thought it was, maybe like 20 or 30% or something like that. My grandma, she's very Scottish on my dad's side. So I think he's like half Scottish, half Mexican. He's kind of an interesting mix. But, and I always tell people, like, I have a lot of Scottish in me, but I don't look Scottish, but there you have it.
Well, until you do the DNA, you don't know what you've got, you know, but
exactly.
It kind of goes back to we're all a melting pot. It really doesn't matter. Right. It's all about honor and integrity when you really look at it.
Totally. Absolutely. Well, Paul, I wanted to bring you on today to talk about broker management. As you know, with the changes in the broker industry with Key Impact joining with Waypoint to create action, there has been a lot of brands that are making that transition to action. And then there's also brands that are making the transition out and having needing to find new broker homes. Once the manufacturer finds the proper broker for their business, then they have to manage and cultivate that relationship together. What are some initial ideas and steps that manufacturers should take once they start their relationship with their new broker?
That's a complex question. You know, for a lot of manufacturers, the broker serves really three roles. One is, you know, the brokers need to achieve their sales plan and objectives. And that's first and foremost, you know, when you really dig into it. Secondly, the broker is responsible for local relationships with operators and distribution. And that's a major role. And third, the introduction of innovation. And that's what keeps the lifeblood going, you know, in this industry is new products. And while some don't believe innovation is the purpose of brokers, I believe it is. And how we combine all those really sets the strength for the broker and who they call on. You know, I believe in strategic accounts. It's impossible, you know, you exist in LA. Well, you've got literally thousands of operator accounts. Well, how do you prioritize? You do it through strategic accounts. And by focusing on strategic accounts, you set the bar of excellence of where you're going to introduce your innovation. That's what manufacturers are looking for the most part. Now, to me, it's always one of the challenges is a professional approach. If you pay, you know, a small amount of commissions, you get what you pay for. If you pay a large amount, you get what you pay for. And you have to be realistic in that expectation, I think, if you're a manufacturer. You know, I think everybody strives to do the right thing every day. I think we're all good people in this industry. I've been in it for over 30 years. And, you know, it's really about three things: honor, respect, and consistency. And if we do that, you know, we're going to get good results. And this, you know, the broker is really a unique part of the puzzle, because the brokerage is part of that relationship the manufacturer has with the end user and with local distribution. You're responsible for the training side, the relationships with distributors, salespeople. So you have a lot of roles, and sometimes it's very, very difficult for some brokers to assimilate all that and prioritize, you know. But to me, that's the role we all play. That's how manufacturers work in the United States. You know, you get outside of this country, it's a whole different game. But to me, it makes sense to have a really pragmatic approach to how we go to market, who we call on, and what we call on them with. I think that's the responsibility of the broker today. But I think it's up to the manufacturer to set those guidelines and expectations in place also. They need to know exactly where they want to go and how they're going to get there.
What about when it comes to reporting and communication? Should the expectation be that the broker puts together some sort of report or a monthly call, communication? What do you think about that?
I think 15 or 20 years ago, the reporting, maybe it was a necessary thing. You know, if you look at distribution reports provided by the manufacturer, that tells you a lot what's going on. I think the monthly reports, for the most part, are busy time. They require a lot of effort, a lot of input. And is that really the best use of your time? To me, it's about looking at innovation. Were you able to establish, and I'm speaking about the broker, were they willing or able to establish innovation in the market? Well, you can usually see that on distribution reports if they're calling on the right accounts. But, you know, there's a lot of manufacturers that believe that, you know, if they get a call report, that checks the box. And that's not necessarily good management, in my view.
What about when it comes to working in market, you know, making the trip, investing the dollars on the manufacturer side to come out to the marketplace to visit accounts? Is there a frequency, or is there... Let me ask this. What's the best way for the manufacturer to maximize their return on investment when coming into a market to work with their broker partner?
In my view, I think there should be a very set schedule for all parties. And I think it needs to be viewed with the broker and the manufacturer, regional manager, and, you know, goals and objectives set on what needs to happen in that market. and it should be clear and it should be concise. Now, this isn't like calling on a bank or, you know, an institution. The restaurant business, the food service industry is fluid. And you need a backup plan because inevitably you're going to have a cancellation. But, you know, it really goes back to communication. And it's about how we communicate with one another and understand what the objectives truly are. If we go into the market and we really don't have a clear objective of what we want to accomplish, then there's chaos. And if we really have a focused schedule and we know what we want to do and we allocate the specific amount of time, we should be able to accomplish those objectives. You know, the cost of a sale just about anywhere in the United States today is well over $400 or $500. So if you go and make a sales call, that's what you're going to spend. It makes absolute sense financially to have very clear and precise direction in all parties of where you want to spend your time. You know, it's just that simple to me. And some people do a great job of that, and other people are in that learning phase.
For me, when I look at market visits with the manufacturer, sometimes we've had as high as 5 days. Expectation is 5 days. A few times we've had 4 days, and then most they try to come in for a day or two. But there are a few at 3 days. We try to keep everybody within a day or two to kind of concentrate and maximize the time and quality of the calls. After 2 days, we find that now you're just stretched thin. You're just trying to get anything. And the time required and effort required to set up 3 full, really solid days, it's very difficult. And working with the manufacturer to understand their expectations, but then with also letting them know our capabilities is important when it comes to that. Sometimes, too, we get a manufacturer come to us in spring within, you know, in 2 weeks, I'm coming out. I'd like to have calls set up. Many times it's, hey, I got to have at least 4 weeks because it's going to take me a little bit of time, especially if I'm dealing with chefs. Those people are always on the move. They can be, especially if they're a regional chef or if they're managing multiple locations, kind of making sure that you lock them down for an appointment. It can be difficult to do that. So we really try to give enough time to be able to set that up and make sure our team is available to do that. We're also dealing with other market visits from other manufacturers and then food shows simultaneously. So it's kind of a big coordination. I like to think that the brokers are kind of like we're like ducks. We're calm on the top and then, kicking our feet frantically underneath the water just to keep us moving.
Well, in my view, Nick, you know, I think that schedules ought to be set 45 to 60 days in advance.
Yeah.
For a couple of reasons. First, plan the objectives correctly. Mm-hmm. Second, if you're flying in, get your reservations made. You'll cut your airline fees in half by proper planning. Third, decide what accounts you want to go and be a participant if you're the manufacturer. And be very clear on your direction. To me, if a broker rep is responsible for setting those days up correctly, with input from the manufacturer. Now, that also means that there should be consistent market engagement by a manufacturer. And that means that, you know, they should be in once a quarter. If they're a large manufacturer, maybe once every 6 months. You're in LA, you're a prime market across the United States. I can see your largest lines wanting to be a participant in that. And maybe it's 2 days. You know, it's exhausting for the broker, but on the other hand, you got the manufacturer who's, expending vast sums of money to have their people in the market. So there's a fine balance there, you know, of what's going on. Typically, Mondays and Fridays are poor days to make calls, to be honest. They're travel days for a lot of people. So for the most part, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursdays make the most sense at the broker level. For the manufacturers, you know, if you've got a regional sales manager traveling 5 days a week, that's pretty tough in this environment. I travel all the time, and it's hard to do that on a consistent week-in, week-out basis. So it really goes back to the center point of most everything that works with the manufacturer and the brokers, quality communication. You know, if we're all doing what we're supposed to do and if we're all communicating, then let's find that balance and harmony and do it in a professional way. That's going to add more value to everybody's bottom line.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. I always appreciate your perspective on these types of things. What about from the manufacturer side, you know, on how they can get the most out of their relationship with the broker in terms of how can they position themselves, just really, let's just say on a human level, of when the broker is thinking about this manufacturer, they think, you know what, I want to make sure that I prioritizing their products. I like enjoy working with them. What can the manufacturer do better to be put in a better light? Because as you know, we're in a people business and people gravitate towards others that they enjoy working with. And we've run into this numerous times since we started our business 9 years ago of manufacturers that are just mean. And so our people are like, I can't work with this person, or they're absent. Like when you need them, you can't find the manufacturer rep. So how can a manufacturer position themselves in the best way possible to be viewed by the broker in a very positive way?
Well, I think there's several things. First is the communication. If you don't have really credible, consistent quality communication, it's all for naught. Mm-hmm. You know, from the manufacturer side, to me, it makes sense to have a professional conversation with every call, with every email. And you would be surprised at the number of emails that I see from different people that are pretty hostile. And it's really not necessary. You know, the broker is simply selling time. The manufacturer is paying for that time. And that's the long and the short of it. If a manufacturer is looking at how many commission dollars they pay to the broker, that's what keeps them engaged. You know, they're just like a lawyer or an accountant. They're selling their time. If you do that consistently, you're going to build value both ways. You can't bank cases, but you can bank commission dollars. For the manufacturer, you can bank dollars, but you can't bank cases. So if you look at that in a total, you know, concept, it's really about how do you communicate against that criteria. Secondly is the environment. You know, most companies talk about your culture, you know, whether it's a sales culture or manufacturing culture. You know, how does that go downstream to your broker? Do you want a positive culture at the broker level if you're a manufacturer, or a hostile one? To me, it's a lot more engaging to have a good quality relationship downstream, because unfortunately, everybody knows about culture if you're out in the trade. You know, some companies have a great culture, some companies don't. And to me, it's about blending those two together and working in harmony. You get so much more done with honey than the iron fist. And I would just tell you, too, that the iron fist works very poorly in today's environment with most companies. It's something that was eventful 20 years ago. It was used a lot. And I think that in today's business world, it's probably not very acceptable. And I think for some manufacturers, it really makes them irrelevant out in the trade, in my view.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. The business has changed. Even since I started back in 2015, those who led with fear or anger or really negative emotions to try to get, let's say in my case, me as the broker to do something, you build resentment towards that person, or you become afraid of that person and you don't want to engage with that person. And, you know, it has, that spectrum has definitely shifted though. You know, if you think it might be a pendulum, and it's swung more of the way of collaboration, leading with kindness and empathy, that we're just people trying to do our best here. And that goes a long way when working within the broker and manufacturer relationship. What about when a broker manufacturer relationship, when it sours a little bit? You know, like anything, sometimes there's cycles. You have your good years, and then you have some tougher years. How can a manufacturer broker work through issues that might arise that might sour their relationship?
You know, the manufacturer and the broker, they need to have constant reviews about what's going right and what isn't going so well. And it usually goes back to point number one I made in the first part of this conversation, was the sales plan. You know, manufacturers set their production based on volumes, and they need to be absolute. You know, they need to be secured. They need to be part of the conversation. And how do we get there? Well, we get there jointly. It's not all one way, or, you know, just the manufacturer's commitment. It's about everybody working together as a team. And if we work together and we establish those values, the broker should be in that position. I've never been an advocate of letting things simmer. I'd rather confront it and say, look, we're not getting it done, but let's talk about why. Let's come up with some solutions to improve where we're going and how we're getting there. And to me, that makes better sense than throwing in a towel or having these, you know, hostile conversations. I don't think they're helpful. and not necessary because, you know, there's fewer brokers today than there ever has been. And to me, it's about how do we balance that relationship? How do we get the, from a manufacturer's point of view, how do we get that to work in harmony with the broker and get the objectives achieved?
Yeah, makes sense to me. Paul, thank you so much for coming on and joining me again here on another episode. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Nick. Appreciate it. Always be there for you.
What's the best way for people listening to connect with you?
You know, my website, tacticware.com, has a lot of information about what I do. I'm on LinkedIn as well. I've written a book last year. It's published on Amazon. There's also numerous articles on my website about, you know, this building the structure of your organization. You know, it's really focused in on management leadership, developing that common culture, and third, effective strategies, planning that out, and how do you make that effective in your organization. So that's really where I stick. And, you know, I work across multiple industries, and the one thing that's common, whether you're selling food, medical components, is it's people. People are the common denominator. And while you can fix a machine and put a new part in, people are a lot more complicated. And that's really where I come into play. So with that, go to tacticware.com. It's a great place to educate yourself.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Paul. I really appreciate you joining me.